Thank you. Is the light okay? Is it too bright?
I think we're fine.
Okay, so thank you very much for the opportunity to visit you and talk here. So I'll talk about metastable dynamical sufficiently breaking in points of enhanced symmetry. And this is work that I've done with two other grad students at Rutgers, Kulasena and Zala Taroba, and it's based on a paper that appeared in JHEB, and there's also a summary which appeared in the conference proceedings and on the archive here. So there are many possibilities to do physically understand a model, and undoubtedly one of the most popular ones is supersymmetry. It solves the hierarchy problem, you can get gate coupling unification, and it has a dark matter candidate. But clearly supersymmetry is not something we see at our energy scale, so therefore it must be broken. And the question of how supersymmetry gets broken is an important question in physics, and then also how this breaking gets mediated to the sector that contains the standard model is an important problem. What I'll talk about in this seminar is about how it could be broken. So let me give you some more motivation. If supersymmetry is supposed to be relevant for the hierarchy problem, then the Susie breaking scale must be well below the Planck scale. And the question is, how can you obtain this naturally?
If we touch the wow again, there's just that high the term.
So what we want to have is we want to have a Susie breaking scale well below the Planck scale. And the question is, how can we obtain this in a natural way? And there's really only one way we know how to do this, and this is through dynamical supersymmetry breaking, which was first talked about in a paper by Witten in 1981. And the idea is that you can dynamically generate a scale that's related to the Susie breaking scale. And this scale can be hierarchically smaller than any fundamental scale in the theory. So for example, if lambda here is a Susie breaking scale and m is the Planck scale, then they can be related in this way where there's an exponential. This exponential is to the power of some constant there, which is of the order of 4 pi squared, and this g is the gauge coupling evaluated at a very high scale. And this exponential can be very small, so that lambda is a lot less than the fundamental scale m. Now, when people try to construct models of dynamical supersymmetry breaking, where they required there to be no supersymmetric vacuum, so that the metastable vacuum that you, sorry, that the, so that the Susie breaking vacuum that you have is the only one is stable. Then it turned out that there are many non-trivial requirements. So some of these are, I've listed here, some of them are that you need chiral matter. There's some exceptions with massless vector-like matter, for example, the models of Integrated Thomas and Xavier Nahida. Also, if you can lift all non-compact vector directions and you've got a spontaneously broken global symmetry, then you can have stable dynamical supersymmetry breaking. Another requirement is that the R symmetry, if you have a superpotential that has an R symmetry, or is at least non-generic. And all these conditions, so to say, made it seem that dynamical supersymmetry breaking is very non-generic and very hard to achieve. However, if you don't require the stability of the vacuum, and you only require the vacuum to be metastable, then it turns out that dynamical supersymmetry breaking seems very generic. So the idea is that we live in some Susie breaking vacuum here, and far away in field space, there's another vacuum which is supersymmetric. And if the lifetime for us for the decay from the Susie breaking vacuum to the supersymmetric vacuum is long enough, there's no conflict with observations, and so this is a viable possibility. And this idea has been around for quite a long time, but in 2006, it was shown by Chirigaya-Sab and Shi that you have metastable vacuum in a very simple theory, just supersymmetric QCD with massive flavors. And this made it seem that DSP in metastable vacuum is very generic. And another proof of this is that there have been many papers since then on this subject, and showing that metastable Susie breaking is very generic, and it opened up a whole new, many new possibilities for model building. And this talk, I'll discuss our model. So now let me first tell you why our model is interesting. So there are certain model building goals that you would like to have for a realistic or an aesthetically pleasing theory of supersymmetry breaking, and I've listed some of them here. You need the R symmetry to be broken. So in this case, we'll have a spontaneous breaking of the R symmetry. This can give us non-zero Giugino masses. Whenever you break a global symmetry spontaneously, there'll be a massless Gaussian boson. In this case, we call it the R axion. And in order to not be in conflict with terminology, we would like to have a small explicit breaking of the R symmetry also, so that this R axion can get a non-zero mass. You also like your model not to have any relevant parameters, and that all scales are dynamically generated. Another nice thing is if you have singlets, which are coupled to the DSP, to the fields that in the dynamical Swiss integrated sector, we like your model to be renormalizable for calculability. And it's nice if it has a large global symmetry so that you can gauge a subgroup of that global symmetry and identify it with the standard model gauge group. And this way you can get direct gauge mediated Swiss integrating. Another thing to look for is for features that could be generic in the landscape of all symmetric gauge theories and also in the landscape of string vacuum. And the model that I present in this talk has all these desirable features. So let me give you the outline. So first, I'll review this model by interrogator Seidel and Chi, which is just Suzy breaking in supersymmetric QCD with massive flavors. And then I'll discuss our model, and you'll see why I'll spend some time reviewing this ISS, reviewing the ISS model. So our model is just supersymmetric breaking in two copies of supersymmetric QCD, which are coupled by singlets. And it turns out that one of these sectors will be like this ISS sector. The key features of our model are the following. So there are no relevant parameters, and all scales are dynamically generated. In particular, also the quark masses are generated dynamically. There is Suzy breaking the enhanced symmetry point along pseudo runaway direction. So this runaway, so the idea is that you have a runaway where the potential goes to zero, and this is lifted by perturbative quantum corrections. So just like the pseudo modulus is a classically flat direction which is lifted by perturbative quantum corrections, we'll have a runaway which is lifted by perturbative quantum corrections, and we call this a pseudo runaway. Then after I present the model, I'll show that the meniscal vacuum are long lived, I'll show that the R symmetry is broken spontaneously explicitly, and I'll make some brief comments on direct gauge and cosmology. And then I'll give a summary. So let's start with a review of the ISS model. So the ISS model consists of the following. So you've got supersymmetric QCD with gauge group SUNC. So there are NC colors. There are also NF flavors. And these flavors have masses, which I'm going to call MISS. And these masses have to be much smaller than the strong coupling scale, which I'm going to call lambda. The beta function of supersymmetric QCD I've given here, so it's 3NC minus NF. And the electric theory is as entirely free for NF less than 3NC. So for NF less than 3NC, beta is positive. The electric theory has a superpotential at tree level, which is given by MISS times trace QQ bar. The Qs and Q bars are just the flavors of the supersymmetric QCD sector, so there are NF of these. And if you want, and this is the mass parameter, this MISS. Now there's also non-perturbative superpotential contribution, but I have not given this here. I'll give this later. I'll mention it later. This is just a tree level point. Now what you want is you want this MISS to be a lot less than lambda. And this means that you are well into the strong coupling regime of this theory. And in order to have theoretical control over this theory, you need to be in this range of NF. So between NC plus 1 and 3 halves NC. And the reason is because in this range for NF, there's another theory, a dual theory, which we call the magnetic theory. This dual magnetic theory is a different theory, but it has the same infrared behavior as electric theory. So if we're far into the infrared, as given by MISS dot S and lambda, we can go to the dual theory, and this theory is infrared free, and we've got theoretical control over it. So this dual theory is infrared free, and also NF is in this range, we say that the theory is in the free magnetic range. Let me now discuss this dual theory. So the semi dual consists of, again, supersymmetric QCD, this time the gauge group is NC tilde, where NC tilde is NF minus NC. So in the free magnetic range, this is a positive number. There are also these singlets, NF squared of them. These singlets are MIJ, and they consist of the fundamental quarks. They can be written in terms of fundamental degrees of freedom of the electric theory, like this, so QI, QJ bar, by the strong coupling scale lambda. And there are also NF magnetic quarks, Q and Q tilde, and all these are weakly coupled. And the superpotential of this magnetic theory I've written here. So here again, you've got this MISS parameter, lambda is the strong coupling scale, M are these singlets, and there's a term H phase Q and Q tilde, so Q are the magnetic quarks, M is again the same matrix, and H is some marginally irrelevant coupling.
So when you say singlets, are those are singlets under the NC tilde group?
That's right.
Okay, and I guess the capital Qs are singlets under that group? Why are they singlets?
So these are singlets also, so that's
gauge and hem is a compactor for the big Q.
What do you mean by contractors?
So these mesons are the singlets on here, right?
The mesons.
Oh, the QQ bar, you say. Oh, okay, right. There's a hidden contraction. Okay, right.
Okay. And let me summarize again. So if you look at the gauge coupling as a function of the scale, then if you're in the electric theory, the coupling is so the theory is asymptotically free, so the gauge coupling goes to zero at large scales. It blows up at the strong coupling scale lambda. If you go below this scale lambda, you get the magnetic theory, the dual theory, which is infrared free, so the gauge coupling goes to zero as you go to zero scale, as the scale goes to the infrared. And this magnetic theory has a lambda pole, which can be taken to be at the same region as the strong coupling scale of the electric theory. Now this ISS model, so you can study the symmetry breaking in this dual model without including the gauge dynamics. And what the gauge dynamics do is that they will only restore supersymmetry far away from the supersymmetry breaking vacuum. So I'll discuss that in the slides time. And this dual theory breaks supersymmetry at tree level. And you can see this as follows. So let's look at the F term of Mij. So what we do is we go back to the superpotential here. We take a derivative with respect to Mij, you get a delta ij. Here you'll just pick up the qi, qj tilde. So that's the equation I've written here. And this delta ij is a matrix of rank nf, because I and j go from 1 up to nf. But the qi, qj tilde here, the c only goes from 1 up to nf minus nc, this empty tilde, whereas the I and j go from 1 up to nf. So this is a matrix of rank nc tilde, which is nf minus nc. Since that is less than nf, this thing cannot be satisfied. You cannot put this equal to zero, so therefore the F term is not zero, and supersymmetry is broken at tree level. And this is called supersymmetry breaking by the rank condition. So then, it turns out that you've got a classical modelized space of supersymmetric, supersymmetry breaking vacuum. You can parameterize them as follows. So Q is some Q0 of 0, Q tilde is some Q0 tilde 0, and M is expanded like this, so around 0, where this X multiplied NC by NC matrix. These Q0 and Q0 tilde have to satisfy some relationship, which I've written down here. Now, it turns out that there are many massless fields here. Some of these are just Goldstone bosons because you've broken some of the global symmetry. But there are also these pseudomoduli, which are these Q0, Q0 tilde, and X. And these are just arbitrary fields, so NF minus NC times NF minus NC fields, or NC times NC fields. And these pseudomoduli get a mass at one loop. And that has to be calculated, and it turns out, so you calculate this using the common Weinberg potential, which I've written down here. So this supertrace means that you have to sum over both the bosons and fermions, and this M here is a mass match. These mass matrices are functions of the pseudomoduli. And it turns out that when you calculate the masses, you find that they are non-tachyonic. And this is the crucial point. So instead of there being a tachyon, where the vacuum just go directly to the supersymmetric vacuum, these directions are lifted. You first have to go above some hill before you get to the supersymmetric vacuum. So it turns out the vacuum are metastable. And the other important thing is that the vacuum are actually at x equal to zero. So if x is zero, then this m is equal to zero. This will be important, as I'll mention in a few minutes. So now, if we go far away from the supersymmetric breaking vacuum, it turns out that supersymmetry is dynamically restored. And we can see this as follows. If this m is not equal to zero, so we give this m some depth, and if we go back to the superpotential here, if this m is very large, then this q and q tilde have very large masses, so you can integrate them out, and you're left with pure super Young-Mills theory, pure supersymmetry Young-Mills theory. And this theory is known to undergo the Giardino condensation. So just like the in QCD, the quartz can condense, here the gadolinium can condense, and you get a non-perturbative superpotential. And this non-perturbative superpotential is of this form, so delta M to some power. There are also factors of lambda and other factors in here, which I haven't written down. But you can then see that there are actually NC supersymmetric vacua, where the bev of M is given by this expression here. And it turns out that the Metasol vacua are long-lived if you make this MI is a lot less than lambda. So the idea that we live here at M equals, the Suzy breaking vacuum is here at M equals zero, and far away there's a supersymmetric vacuum. And if this condition is satisfied, MI is a lot less than lambda, then the decay time is very large.
Okay, can you go back for just a moment? So, this pseudo or Suzy vacua just comes purely from that W?
So without this, you won't get it.
There's
also a mass curve.
I'm trying to figure out how MISS came into this. So there's another balancing term. Okay.
That's right.
But nonetheless, the net thing is a supersymmetric vacuum.
That's right.
How do I see that for sure? That MISS, I guess, term, I guess, is supersymmetric. Is that right?
So if you include the Cheeto potential, then. And you look at the F terms, you find that you can put them all to zero with an M which is there. So, okay, yeah, I mean, it works.
Okay, I just. So you say the F terms are all zero, even though the expectation value of M is not.
That's right.
Okay.
And M in particular is quite large compared to this.
Okay, I'm getting the answer. All right.
So now I'm just trying to go beyond the ISS. So first of all, ISS contains this explicit quark mass, which is a relevant parameter. This is just this MISS here. And the question is, can this be generated dynamically using only renormalizable operators? Now it is possible to do retrofitting on this parameter, but this uses non-renormalizable operators, so I don't want to do that. I want to use renormalizable operators. And whenever you have a relevant parameter, what you can do is you just replace it with a singlet. So in this case, the singlet is phi, and I multiply that by some marginal coupling with lambda. And it turns out that if you just take ISS and you replace MISS by lambda phi, you do not get Suzy breaking. In fact, you get a supersymmetric vacuum, and phi is equal to zero. And that's easy to see. If we go back to this rank condition, so this was the condition that Suzy's broken at tree level. But now if we have MISS here, we replace this with lambda phi, then this equation can be put equal to zero by putting phi equal to zero, so then this term zero, and you put q and q tilde equal to zero. So the f term will be zero, and Suzy is not broken. And in particular, since phi is zero, the mass of the quarks will be zero. So we need something more. And the other thing I would like you to note is the following. So this magnetic superpotential I've written down here again, and this has an R symmetry. So the superpotential should have R charge 2, then I can give the M an R charge of 2, and then this term has R charge 2, and the second term has R charge 2 if I make Q and Q tilde have R charge 0. So then solve so that there's an R symmetry. But since in the metastable state in ISS I've got M equals 0, the R symmetry is not spontaneously broken. So you cannot use this to give mass to the gadolinium, for example. Now another thing I'd like you to note is that there is a small explicit breaking of the R symmetry, and this comes from the non-perturbative term. So here again is the non-perturbative term from gadolinium condensation. So this goes as M. If I make this diagonal and I call all the diagonal entries also M, then this goes as M to some power. And if you want to give, you can ask the question, can this explicit breaking of the R symmetry give you a mass for the gadolinium? And it turns out that it cannot. So if you take the second derivative of the non-perturbative superpotential with respect to M, then it goes to M to some positive power here. And since M is equal to zero, again, in the Suzy breaking minimum, this term just vanishes. So the explicit R symmetry breaking also cannot give you non-zero gadolinium masses. So now I've finished the review for ISS. Now I'll discuss our model. So this is what I would like to do. So I want to consider two supersymmetric QCD sectors. One of these sectors I'm going to call the unprime sector. So this has n c colors, n of flavors, and strong company scale lambda. And there are the other sector I'm going to call the prime sector, which has n c prime colors, n of prime flavors, and lambda prime to strong company scale there. And they're covered by a single phi. So for the unprime sector, I've got Q and Q bar, which are fundamentals and antifundamentals of SCNC. For the prime sector, I've got P and P bar, which are fundamentals and antifundamentals of SCNC prime. And phi is a singlet. And the achievable superpotential for now, I've written in a very general way. So there's a lambda phi trace PV bar term, so it's like a dynamical mass. And there are also these explicit quark masses, psi and psi prime still, that I've included for now. And first of all, note that there's a large global symmetry, so that can be used later for direct gate mediation. And one thing that you can do is you can always shift phi to absorb one of these explicit quark masses into phi. And if psi is equal to psi prime, then you can shift phi to absorb the masses into phi, both of them, and then you're left with this superpotential at the tree level. And this is the superpotential that I'll be working with. So this superpotential has no relevant parameters. It only has marginal couplings lambda and lambda prime. The point at which the quarks of both of these sectors becomes massless is at phi to zero. So if phi is zero, then the masses of these quarks are zero. And this point coincides with both of these sectors, and we refer to this as an enhanced symmetry point. And also, you can actually enforce this form of the superpotential by gauging a non-anomalous discrete symmetry. So this can make it technically natural to have this form of the superpotential. And then I just want to point out, you could add a term kappa phi cubed to the superpotential and also get metastable vacua. This was done by Brummer in 2007. We're not going to add this term, so this is the superpotential that we'll find, that we want to work with. And we'll also find metastable vacua without this additional term. So first of all, let me tell you that there are supersymmetric vacua. So again, this is the achievable superpotential. And you can see this as follows. If phi is very large, then these masses for Q, Q bar, and Q bar are very large. You can integrate them out, the Qs and Ps, and you obtain two copies of pure superhuman wheels. Again, you get Gaijin condensation in both of these sectors. And the superpotential turns out that you can write it like this. And then you can just take, you solve the F term for phi, and you find, you can set it equal to zero, and you find that there are solutions, and you find supersymmetry back here. Now, these supersymmetry vector will not be important for the rest of the discussion, and
and those aren't necessarily at phi equals zero?
They're not at phi equals zero. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they won't be important for the rest of the discussion, so I'll basically ignore them. But they are there, they are supersymmetric vector in this model. So then I told you that we have these NCNF lambda and NC prime, N prime, lambda prime, and I have to tell you how we choose them. So first, let's look at the prime sector. So for the prime sector, we're going to choose NF prime to be less than NC prime. And we're going to work at energies well above the strong coupling scale lambda prime. So since we're well above the strong coupling scale lambda prime, this sector is weakly coupled. So NCNC prime is weakly coupled. And it turns out that the full superpotential for the prime sector is given by this. So here's the tree-level piece, which you've seen before, and here's this non-perturbative piece, which is generated by Gaijin condensation. This is just the affectine side of the superpotential. And you can eliminate this piece, and it turns out that if you look at the potential of the function of phi, potential function of phi, it goes as phi to some negative power. So the potential drops down as the phi increases. And the key point here is that phi is pushed away from zero. So before this, I told you that if I just take MISS and replace it with phi, then phi is equal to zero. And the point of this sector is to push phi away from zero, because you'll have the singularity at phi equal to zero. So then, let's look at the unprime sector. And here, you will see now why I've spent some time reviewing ISS. This is basically just the ISS model. So NF is chosen to be the free magnetic range between NC plus 1 and 3 halves NC. I'm going to work at energy scales well below the strong coupling scale. So this sector is strongly coupled. And in order to have theoretical control in this sector, I need to go to this infrared free weakly coupled cyclic dual, which again is given by this SNC. NC tilde with NC tilde to NF minus NC. So just like in ISS. And the full superpotential for the unprime sector in this dual theory is given by this. So here is my tree level contribution. This M that you see now here is just, for convenience, I call little lambda times big lambda. And here's the non-perturbative piece, part of the unprime sector, which again comes from gauging your condensation. These MIJ are just the mesons again, in terms of the fundamental quarks that go as QI, QJ bar over lambda. And then there's this lambda pole in the cyclic dual, which we can take to be equal to the strong coupling scale in the electric theory. So the full superpotential in this range, lambda prime, about this and lambda, so in between this, is this. So the chi level piece from the unprime sector, the first two terms, and the prime sector, this term, the prime sector non-perturbative contribution, and the prime sector, sorry, and the unprime sector non-perturbative contribution. Now, what you see is that this term here, the non-perturbative contribution from the unprime sector, you neglect that if you make lambda very large. And we'll take that limit. So lambda is going to be very large for us. Then this term you can neglect, and it turns out that this term, all that's going to do is going to give you dynamical 2D restoration again. So just like an ISS. But we don't want to neglect this, and we're left with this first line here. Now, just as a check, let's neglect the non-perturbative contribution from the prime sector also. So make lambda prime equal to zero. Then we're left with this treatable potential here. Let's just check what happens. So we take lambda prime to zero, and superpotential reduces to this, just a treatable piece. So this is just ISS. If phi were a constant, it would just be ISS. And there's an additional treatable term. This additional treatable term doesn't do anything, really. It does not give you 2D breaking. And instead, you find a modulus basis of a symmetric vacuum where phi is equal to zero and is parameterized by this dw phi, which is this expression here. So m trace m plus lambda prime trace p bar equal to zero. So trace m and trace p bar are arbitrary, and you have a whole modulus space. So the arbitrary will satisfy this condition together, but there's a whole modulus space of supersymmetric vacuum. Okay, so we have to include the gauge numbers of the prime sector. And the way we do that, we take lambda prime to be finite, of course. And we're going to work at energy scales where lambda prime phi, so little lambda prime phi, is a lot bigger than lambda prime. So in this case, if little lambda prime phi is a lot bigger than pp, is a lot bigger than big lambda prime, these pp bar are massive, you again can integrate them out, and you again just get pure superior middle side sector, which has Gaugino condensation. And when you integrate them out, and you write under, and you include them for the contribution, the superpotential reduces to this form. So the first two terms here are the Shino piece of the unprime sector, and then there's the prime sector non-perturbative contribution. So this is the low energy superpotential, and we can now analyze the F term, and I'll do that, and I'll just write on the board here. So if we look at the F terms for the superpotential, so there's an F term for Q, that goes as mq tilde. There's an F term for q tilde, which goes as qm. Then there's an F term for mij. So there's a contribution from the first part here, so m phi delta ij. And then a contribution from the second term, which is just h qi Qj tilde. And then finally there's a contribution, or there's the F term for phi. That is contribution from the first term, so M trace M, plus contribution from the non-perturbative contribution from the M prime, from the prime sector. And that goes as some number times 1 over phi to some positive power, which is nc prime minus n prime over nc prime. Now, if you want to put all these F terms to zero to see if there's a supersymmetric vacuum, let's try to do that. So if you put the first two terms to zero, you can do that by putting Q and Q tilde equal to zero. Then you satisfy these first two terms. But if you now want to put this term to zero, then you see that the phi has to go to zero. And then from the last equation here, if phi goes to zero, this term blows up, and to balance that, you need to make trace m go to infinity. So what you find is that you have a runaway with phi goes to zero and tracing goes to infinity, and so far there's no stable vacuum. But do note that we have not included the third quantum regressions as of yet. So here's the global view of the potential. So potential as a function of this m and phi. So if phi equals zero, you see this wall here, which is this blower, who blows up, so the singularity of phi equals zero. And this runaway is as m goes to infinity, phi goes to zero, so it's where you go back here. And this plot was made with the help of a nice program that was written by Peter Pannenbrook, another grad student at Rutgers, and this program is called Escape. And let me just draw another plot on the board here. So if you look at the potential in this two-dimensional plot of phi and m, then the equation w phi equal to zero defines the line like this here. So this is w phi equal to zero. And the runway goes in this direction as phi goes to zero and m goes to infinity. And this drain that you see, so this minimum along this line here, is this line that you see there. So now let's include the third quantum corrections. So the way we're going to do that is similar as an ISS, we're going to expand m around zero, then we'll have phi to the level of the singlet. So q is again q zero zero, q tilde is q zero tilde zero. This m is expanded around zero with this x here. The q0 and q0 tilde are just arbitrary matrices that satisfy an expression like this, so minus m phi delta phi j. And now what I want to do is I want to look at this potential in certain regions. So if you look at this line here, that's m equal to 0. So m equal to 0 just means x is equal to 0. So you can think of this as x now. So if you look along x equals to 0, then the potential looks like this. So v is a function of phi. There's a singularity at zero, there's a minimum, and then it increases again. And this minimum lies at phi zero. So somewhere here. This phi zero consists of the strong coupling scales, big lambda prime, and also the marginal couplings, little lambda prime, so some complicated expression. But yeah, okay, we can obviously calculate it. Then the next thing I want to do is I want to look at the potential as a function of x at this point, phi to phi zero. So I want to go perpendicular to this. So what I want to do is I want to magnify like this and look in the x direction. And then what you find is the following. So at x equal to zero, there's nothing special. It's just, you're just on the side of a hill. There's a minimum, which is on the same order as phi zero. So it turns out that this minimum is where w phi is equal to zero. So at this point. And then the potential increases again. And the curvature of this potential here is of the order of m squared, where m is this little lambda times big lambda. And if we now include the third quantum directions from the common Weibull potential, so we integrate out the dominant massive fluctuations around this point here, and what you find is the following. If you go very far from x equal to zero, so if you're round, if x is very large here, the regressions are just logarithmic, and they're not large enough to stop the runway. But if you go close to x equal to zero, the regressions are quadratic, and they can never be important for the potential. So in particular, we take the common Weibull potential to go as, so if you calculate it, what you find is that it's given by this function, which is quadratic in x. This coefficient here consists of the following. So there's nc, so the number of colors. B is just a loop factor, so just basically one over a pi squared. H is just a marginal coupling that appears in the tree level of two potential. This m is this little lambda and this big lambda, and phi is just the variable that this is just a field phi here. And this whole expression here, this coefficient, I'm going to call m common Weibull squared. And there are other corrections, of course, but they're not going to be quantitatively important. And what you find then, if you include this, that there are metastable vacua. So what you need to do is you need to choose this classical curvature here, this m squared, much smaller than the common Weibull curvature, m common Weibull squared. So what you need to do is you need to make this epsilon, which is m's ratio of m squared over m comma 1 squared, not less than 1. And to do that, you need to make this m very small, which basically is saying you need to make lambda very small, and you can do that by taking this marginal coupling of little lambda to be very, very small. But when you do that, what you find is that this black line is a classical curvature, or a classical potential, and you get this little dimple here, which is this, which is generated by the Fermat potential. And then you have a metastable vacuum at this point. Now, the important thing here is that this looks like a large quantum progression, but it's not really. It's just a loop factor times the height of the potential. But what the Coleman-Weyl potential does is that it overwhelms the classical curvature. So it's able to, since this is just a very flat, a very gentle slope, you can overwhelm that gentle slope with the curvature of the Coleman-Weyl potential. And you find a metastable there, minimum.
So, just first comment, I mean, this looks very, very similar to a model that I wrote down a long time ago, where you have a singlet just like your phi, and you couple one of them to a SUSY QCD sector, which is exactly like yours, that pushes, tends to degenerate the dynamical superpotential, pushes phi away. And the other sector, instead of the ISS model, it was just, it could be any SUSY breaking model. It could be literally anything, okay? But in those days, it was, I just used SU5 with a 5 bar and a 10, for example, okay? Mm-hmm. And then what you find is exactly as you've described, you know, when phi gets pushed away by the SUSY QCD sector, but phi sets the scale for SUSY breaking in that other sector. So the combination of those two things you can show leads to a local minimum. And there are also global SUSY preserving minima where phi equals zero,
mm-hmm.
but again, you know, we didn't care then. People care, don't care now. That's fine. But so that seems to me that I don't see why you couldn't run that story, replacing this SU5 theory with this ISS model and looking at some local vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any reason why you couldn't do that. But then I'm a little puzzled why you need this extra
Coleman-Weinberg
correction. Why doesn't it just work if you start off, if S was just a parameter, the singlet phi, if phi was just a number, not something that you dialed, then if you chose the other parameters in your theories, I guess your M's, so that you were near this metastable vacuum in the ISS model, around that vacuum, as long as the SVEV is larger compared to all your other scales, there's really essentially a one-dimensional flat direction parameterized by S,
mm-hmm.
classically, and I don't see why you wouldn't just get a metastable SUSY breaking vacuum without these corrections.
So it seems that the thing that you're talking about is similar to this model by Grimmer earlier in the year, where he was able to take one of the sectors, stabilize phi, basically.
No, neither of the sectors, in this thing, neither of the sectors stabilizes phi by itself. So phi would have, if you just had, I think it's exactly like what you're doing. If you only had one of the sectors, phi would run away to infinity. That's exactly your SUN sector. But the other sector breaks SUSY by a scale that's essentially set by phi. So the SUSY breaking vacuum energy is some positive power of phi in the other sector. That's all you need. And so, in my case, it was the model that I looked at. I had the SUSY broken by some SU5 gauge theory. But in your case, your SUSY is broken by a metastable vacuum in this ISS model. But I would think that the vacuum energy would also go as a positive power of S, the singlet, sorry.
Yeah.
And so, sorry, it was S in my model.
That's fine.
Sorry. So you would end up that if you had this limit where the VEV of S was heavier than your dynamical scales, you would just find a local minimum that way. Because
mm-hmm.
then S is really the only,
right.
only well, it's sort of a decoupled modulus from whatever the moduli are in these other two.
Well, okay, so I'll have to look at that. I wasn't aware of that. But here you do have a runaway, and you definitely need this Coleman-Weinberg regression.
So your VEV that you're eventually interested in, what's the size of the BEV of your singlet compared to the dynamical scale that's breaking Susie? What's the hierarchy there?
So the Susie breaking scale here is m squared phi squared. And the
and m is smaller than phi?
M is about less than phi, yeah.
So it sounds like it should be, I'm confused. Yeah, that sounds like it's the same regime.
Okay. Yeah, okay, maybe we can look at that also. Okay, if we're interested, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so this is m squared phi squared, the height of potential. And phi is of the order of, yeah, is this phi zero that he is here. So the, yeah, so this is larger in some sense. If you take this to the fourth power, this phi zero. So this point here.
Maybe the difference is that that somehow, at that minimum, I mean, if I just look at this plot, that there's a minimum there. It looks like, gee, why don't you just break Susie by sitting there?
Yeah.
But there are M directions that
yes,
go
that's
sort
right,
of
that's right.
that you sneak around. So
that's
I think
right. so
I think maybe the difference
right.
is that what I was doing, I didn't have the M moduli,
okay.
so I was just living at that minimum right there. So you know, you have this M moduli because you're in this ISS model.
Right.
Maybe that's the difference.
So what happens is that you would go to this point, and then you would run down this way.
Right.
Run away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, but I'd like to.
You should look at that
yeah.
because there might be some other useful things there.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. So yeah. So but the important point here is also that this you get stabilized away from zero for x, and this is what the potential looks like in the base field vacuum. So in this phi direction, you see that you have this parabolic shape, and in the x direction, you're just on the side of a hill, so you come down. This is simple, and then you keep going down, and we call this a pseudo runaway because it's a runaway that's lifted by perturbative quantum correction. It's just like a pseudo modulus is a modulus that's classically flat, which is lifted by perturbative quantum corrections.
So I didn't get. I know you probably made this point, but I didn't get it. Why are the perturbative quantum corrections large there and not everywhere else? What is
the so the important point is that
the
curvature.
There?
The important point is the curvature. That the curvature near x equals 0 is quadratic, whereas far away, for x large, it's just logarithmic. So the logarithm is not able to change the curvature of the classical potential, but the quadratic piece is able to do that. But that's only when x is small, so when you're close to the origin here.
But it doesn't imply strong coupling?
No.
Why not?
So this. I mean, the main thing is that the curvature is large, but this quantum correction is just a loop factor times the height of this potential.
Mm-hmm.
So it's m squared phi is just a times the loop factor.
Anomalously small there.
Pardon me?
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, so it does look like a large quantum correction, but it's just a loop factor times the height of the potential. And the main thing is just the curvature gets overwhelmed. Whereas if you go far away from it, for x large, it's just logarithmic, the quantum correction, and you can't change the classical curvature. Okay, so I present the model now, and now I'll discuss the show quickly that the Mesfeld vacuum are long-lived, and I'll just make some comments about the R symmetry and gauge mediation and a few other things. So I've just shown you that in the phi direction you have this parabolic shape, so you cannot tunnel in the phi direction, but you can tunnel in the x direction. So you can basically analyze the tunneling of this model by just by a one-dimensional potential barrier. So here I've written in the blue, here is the classical potential, and including the common model potential, that's the black line. And you stabilize at x0 here, there's a peak at x peak, and you will tunnel to a point x tilde. And I've written down the scales here, but the important point is that if you make this parameter epsilon very small, then these scales are very well separated. And the lifetime was given by each of the bounce action. The bounce action goes as basically one of the epsilon squared times the loop factor. So this can be made parametrically large as epsilon goes to zero. And all you need to do is you need to choose this m, so this lambda, which is inside the m, you need to choose that to be very small. Then you can make this parametrically longer. So now we make some comments about the R symmetry. So the problem with stable dynamical supersymmetry breaking is, so where you have low supersymmetry vacuum, is that you generically require a superpotential that has an R symmetry. But in order to get non-zero Gaussian masses, this R symmetry should be broken explicitly and or spontaneously. If you break it spontaneously, then, as I said before, you will get a Goldstone boson, which is massless. In this case, you will get a massless R axion. And in order to give this massless R axion a mass, you will need some small explicit breaking of the R symmetry. And if you break the R symmetry, however, explicitly, then you reintroduce a supersymmetric vacuum, according to this general argument by Nelson and Seiberg. And the vacuum that you have, the Suzy breaking vacuum that you have, is just metastable. But if you've got a small explicit breaking, then this R symmetry is approximate, and you can have very long-lived metastable state. And this argument here ignores gravity. Gravity will also break R symmetry explicitly. But ignoring gravity, we need some explicit breaking of the R symmetry to give us R axion non-zero mass, which means that we would live in a metastable state. So the question is, how can one break the R symmetry? There are a variety of things that people suggested, so you can add gauge interactions. You can also just consider more exotic Rafferty type models, which is done by Shi. So the Rafferty type models are often the low energy effective theory for many metastable DFB models. And it turns out that if you've got fields with R which are different from 0 to 2 in these Rafferty models, then you have spontaneous breaking of the R symmetry. And this was also shown that they are usually that these models usually have runaway directions, so the metastable vector. So the vector that you have are just metastable. Another option is that you can just add operators which explicitly break the R symmetry by a small amount. And our model shows another way that the R symmetry could be broken. So let me discuss that. So recall that the low energy superpotential, if we take this lambda to be very large, it was given by this. So here's the unprime sector, the Cheadle contribution, and the prime sector, non-perturbative contribution here. There's an exact R symmetry, which I've written down here. And since all of these fields, phi, x, q, and q tilde, have non-zero bands, the R symmetry is spontaneously broken in the metastable vacuum. So these pseudo runaways can break R symmetry spontaneously. You can also include now the gauge dynamics of the unprime sector, so we make lambda finite instead of infinite. And this then turns out that the R symmetry that you have is anomalous, which means that it's explicitly broken by a small amount, so it's just like an ISS. And R axion obtains a small mass then, which one can calculate. And so therefore, the Gaginos in our model can obtain a mass, and the R axion has a mass. So this is good for phenomenology.
And this is also, I don't remember the details anymore, but that's also was a point in the framework that I was talking about in my paper, that there was also, I don't remember if it was automatic or if it was trivial to get very heavy R axions. That
okay.
was another point
yeah.
there.
Mm-hmm. So there was some small explicit breaking that you had from non-perturbative contribution, I guess, also.
I don't remember where the explicit breaking came from anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly wasn't gravity. I don't remember if it was an additional term or if it was just already there in the model.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. But
it was
the same sort of thing.
So let me point out just another example where R symmetry spontaneously broken along a pseudo runaway direction. And this was done by a group in Durham. So what they did, they took the ISS model and just added a baryon term, so this last term here. And so this model has relevant couplings. But what they found is that there is again this runaway to this time to non-supersymmetric metastable minimum. And this runaway is lifted by the turbulent quantum regressions again. And you stabilize away from zero. And so therefore the R symmetry can also be broken spontaneously. Always broken spontaneously. Then let me just briefly make a comment. So I started with this very general superpotential where we had these explicit quark masses, psi and psi prime. And if we now assume that psi is not equal to psi prime, then we can shift phi to absorb only one of them, so let's absorb psi. In this case, we'll have an enhanced symmetry point of phi equals zero and phi equal to minus psi prime. And you can again go through the same thing as I did when psi was equal to psi prime, and you find the low energy superpotential cuts of this form. So this is just the unprime sector, which is unchanged from before. Now the prime sector has this non-perturbative contribution, and the phi is just shifted by psi prime. And this psi prime generically is of the order of the UV cutoff, so it should be very large. And you can analyze whether this thing has metastable vacua, and you find that they have the same, you can find metastable vacua again. But now, if you have this condition that we have, this M, we require this n to be locked this in from Weinberg. This now leads to some complicated expression for m that has to be locked less than something divided by psi prime to some positive power. And since this psi prime is generic of the order of the unit cutoff, this M has to be very, very small. So there's a large fine tuning on M in this case. So therefore, these non-coincident ensemble points do lead to measurable vacuum of the same type, but they're not generic and they require fine tuning. Whereas for us, we do not require any fine tuning. So the setup that we have is generic. Then a brief comment about direct gauge mediation. So supersymmetric QCD has a large global group, which global symmetry, which you can take a subgroup of and identify it with the standard model gauge group, and that can be weakly gauged. And the idea then is that you've got the Suzy breaking sector, which the Suzy breaking can be mediated by the standard model gauge fields directly to the sector that contains the standard model. And this was done by many people also after this ISS paper came out. So in the context of ISS, it was done.
There are also some papers by myself, Arkani Hamid and John Turning, about 10 years earlier, which also do this. So you might want to look at those.
So I guess it was without the ISS type.
Without
so
the ISS.
Yeah, right. So I'm not saying he's the first ones to start this, of course. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm talking about the context of ISS. So again, what we have is a very large global symmetry in our model, and we also have a signal field in our model which can help with model building. So this has not been done, but it would be interesting to do direct gauge mediation in our model. And then just briefly, I want to make a comment about cosmology. So in general, the early universe favors the DSD vacuum, the Suzy vacuum, and there are two reasons, basically, for this. One of them is not such a good reason, but let me give it anyway. So you have this whole continuous space, the moduli space of dynamical supersymmetric breaking vacua, whereas you just have a small number of discrete supersymmetric vacua. So the configuration space to end up in the DSD vacua is just larger, but then to end up in the supersymmetric vacua. But the better reason is that if you just calculate the thermal effective potential, so as the universe evolves and so on, you find that the DSD vacua are favored because they're closer to the original moduli space and they contain more light degrees of freedom. And this was also shown by several people in the context of ISS. So for us, we should have the same thing, that our measurable vacuum is favored. And then I also just want to point out, since the slope of the potential is quite, it is a very gentle slope, this could be useful for inflation also. So let me read the conclusions. So the Suzy breaking model that I presented has several desirable features. So these include renormalizability, there's a large global symmetry, there are no relevant parameters in all the scales that are dynamically generated, and you have an R-symmetry that's broken both spontaneously and explicitly by a small amount, and the vacua, the measurable vacua, are long-lived, parametrically long-lived. And there's this interesting feature of pseudo-runaway, which is a runaway direction which lifts up to total quantum corrections, and it seems that the measurable Suzy breaking near certain ensemble points in moduli space is rather generic. And this has my important place of the landscape, because in the landscape it's of course very difficult to include perturbative quantum corrections, but we've shown here that they can lead to additional metastable minima, so this might affect the counting. So thank you very much.
Can you just go back to your preceding slide for a second? I guess I'm just unfamiliar with this argument that being closer to the origin of moduli space is better.
They're more light degrees of freedom, so the entropy. So from an entropy point of view, you want to end up. Okay. There's a bigger chance that you end up.
I see, just purely from the entropy.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, well, let's thank you again.